Hour number two, Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Ian Safar here with you on this Wednesday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. And first off, what a last calendar year it has been for Vanderbilt athletics as a whole, and what a time it is for the basketball teams right now. The men's and women's teams, both undefeated, both playing great. And to help us talk more about that, we head to our phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, and welcome in Vanderbilt women's coach Shay Ralph to the program, who is 15-0, number 7 in the nation right now. Shay, good morning. How are you?
I'm great. Good morning. How are you guys?
Doing awesome. Good. Really appreciate you taking time to be with us. So, Shay, let's start there. I mean, I realize that it's January, and there's still a lot of work left to be done here. But you've been building this program. You've talked in the past about, you know, the work you've put in and taking hopes and wishes and making it reality. So the significance in your eyes of being at this spot at this point in the season in the top 10, do you take time to acknowledge that with your group while recognizing that there's still a lot more work to be done? What's the significance of being in the top 10 for your program?
Yeah, I mean, you have to take time to enjoy the victories along the way, right? And this is something that we've been talking about. I know I've been talking about with you guys. I talk about it in every press conference. I talk about it in recruiting with our alums. Like, this is, you know, the team that we want to be. These are the games that we want to win. And you can talk and talk and talk, but until you do something, like you said, until you make a hope and a wish reality, then it's just talk. And, you know, in order for us to be in contention for championships, the game like we won on Sunday at home, in front of an incredible crowd with amazing performances from players. You know, Michaela Blakes is getting every National Player of the Year award this week. Those are the games that you have to win. Those are the weeks that you have to have in January and February and early March to be able to be a serious contender for a championship. So it's just another step along the way of the journey that we've talked about wanting to be on here. But man, yes, you got to celebrate it. You know, that's like, you know, most of the time you win a championship, that's a moment. But the kids, the coaches, the fans, they remember the whole journey. So, yeah, we celebrated it, but we're done doing that. Now we're on to our game on Thursday. But I love the confidence that my kids are playing with right now. They're having a good time as well.
So, Shay, I know the atmosphere was great for a huge win in this game. And I know you can't talk – I don't think you can talk about recruits. I don't know. I mean, I guess there are still some rules with recruiting out there, but I know that you have had significant recruits in. There's a lot of momentum for the program. So big picture, your success, but also, you know, football success, facility building, you know, men's basketball success, obviously baseball is very good, but just the overall momentum, how are you seeing that translate when you are talking to kids out there?
It is something like we're talking about our program, and that's like this, our piece of the pie, right? But this is something that has been the vision at Vanderbilt, which is why I'm here with Candace Story Lee and our Chancellor Jeremiah, and the resources, the plan that they put in place to make sure that, you know, the Vanderbilt athletics has elevated to the competitiveness of the academic side of Vanderbilt. So now we can go out and recruit the best student athletes in the world, right? And that was always the plan. And so now you see that vision. All of you guys see that vision coming to life because of the belief of our administration and our leadership. And there's a lot of things I can do for my players, but I can't do anything about our leadership. And we have someone at the helm of our athletic department who was a member of our women's basketball program, who was an athlete here at Vanderbilt. And she has created an environment where all of our teams can compete for championships. And it's done in a way that aligns with the standards and the values of who we are. We're going to do it the right way. But it is fun to be part of, man. Hey, what a time to be a Commodore, huh?
Yeah, it's been unbelievable what's gone over there the last year or so. So you mentioned Michaela Blakes, and obviously, I mean, she took the world by storm last year, an unbelievable player. And she's picked up right where she left off and built on it so far. So as a coach, when you're watching her, her habits, her development, everything that's going on with her right now, how do you put into words the impact that she has had and continues to have on your program as you're trying to build this thing up?
That's a hard thing to put into words. You know, we have to have a player like that, you know, at Vanderbilt. We have to have a player like that on a championship team. And people are going to be like, well, why do you say that? Well, because I played on championship teams. I coached championship teams. And, you know, one of my teammates sent me, my former teammate sent me a video yesterday or right after we won. It was hilarious. I sent it to Michaela and she told me we need to get a collar for the outside dog that we have. Now, I love it. Listen, she is, that kid is one of the most competitive elite players that I've ever coached. And I'm not just saying that because of the performances that she's having, it's the way that she operates. Right. So all of us have things that we do. We have professions, we have things that we want to be great at. We want to make a living. We have goals in our lives for things that we want to achieve. Michaela wants to be one of the best basketball players to ever play. She wants to be an Olympian. She wants to be a pro. She operates like that every single day. So she has a goal. She has a goal, but her standards are so high. And she just raised the level of the competitiveness of my players daily. She raised the level of the way we operate in the locker room. She raised the level of how we operate in the classroom. She's our best student. So everything that she does is at a championship level. And because she's our best player and she operates that way, it has seeped into the fabric of our program so that now everything we do, we operate at a championship level. And that's not something you can really coach. I mean, you can talk about it again, but that's something that we saw in her, we recruited, and now she is brought to our program.
How is she different from freshman to sophomore year, Shay? I know there's been some talk maybe being a little more vocal, just outwardly vocal to teammates. Like, of course, it seems like her game has also taken another step. Like, what has she changed from last year to this year?
You nailed it. She's a more vocal leader. She's a better leader. And I've been pushing her to do it. I was pushing her to do it last year. She wasn't comfortable yet. And, you know, I make fun of her a little bit sometimes. I'm like, I'm glad that you're actually using words this year, because last year it was more like noises when she got frustrated or eye rolls. And I'm like, okay, yeah, I know. What? Tell me. Use words. but what it's allowed her to do is, like, you know, in leadership, you know, when you have a player like her, your best player, if that player is your hard worker, you need them to be some level of a leader. So Michaela already leads by example. But now she's using her voice. And when she does that, it points our players in a direction where they understand, okay, this is what I have to do. I'm going to do it. And they're going to do it for her because they see her do it every day. Again, a player-led team, right? That is something that is different about our program this year. And it is because Michaela Blakes has decided to level up her leadership.
So, Shay, some huge three-pointers for Aubrey Galvin down the stretch the other day. Obviously an extremely decorated high school player. How would you describe the impact she's had very early into her college career for you guys?
Yeah, you know, it's funny. She wasn't that decorated. I don't even think she was the number one player coming out of the state of Illinois. She wasn't in the top 100. But again, I love how we recruit. I love the way that we recruit. We saw something special in her intangible qualities. And a lot of people said she was too small to compete at this level in our conference. I think she's proven people wrong. Would you guys agree?
Oh, yeah. I would say so.
Yeah. She plays with a chip on her shoulder. She's competitive. She wants to win, similar to Michaela. And the impact that she's had, especially since we lost Maddie Green to injury at the beginning of the school year, has been immeasurable and priceless. And it's funny, you know, she's a freshman, and that's a big moment. That was a big moment on Sunday. She had an incredible second half, and without her, we wouldn't have won the game. But after the game, I don't know if you guys saw this. I think I said it in our press conference. The first thing she said to me, I mean, we're just getting out of the handshake line. It's like, hey, coach, sorry about the first half.
Yeah.
I'm like, yeah, no, we're fine. You're good. You responded. But I think what's cool about coaching and hopefully watching our program is you're watching these kids grow up in real life. So we watched Aubrey Galvin grow up from the first half to the second half, and it helped us win the basketball game.
Yeah, I mean, it seemed like LSU was obviously attacking her a lot in the first half, Shay, and you guys were able to get her shots off the ball in the second half. How interchangeable is that backcourt when you know, based on matchups and just, you know, the situation of a particular game?
Yeah, it is great to have that option, right? I think I loved the idea even before the year of moving Michaela off the ball a little bit. and given her a chance to move around, set some screens for her, cut through the lane, have her set some screens, and the same for Aubrey. And you know, those are the adjustments that you have to make in the game. And when you have versatility on the floor, it makes those kinds of decisions a lot easier. And luckily this year we have it.
So, Shea, I know you mentioned Maddie Green, and, of course, you know, losing Camille Pierre in the offseason. I looked at this team like, man, like, are they going to have enough depth? You have someone like Aubrey emerge, but then like Justine Passat and her improvement, which is obvious, you know, on both ends of the floor. Is this team, though, is this team exceeding your expectations at this point?
No, they're not. I knew that we were going to be really good. I wasn't sure how good. I wasn't sure if they knew how good we were going to be. But, you know, it's one thing to have really good players. It's another thing to have a great team. And we have a great team. And our unity, our chemistry, it's different than any team that I've had here before. So, you know, I don't think that in order to win championships that you have to have all the best players. I've never thought that because I've seen it and been part of teams that haven't had them. But I do think that you have to have a great team. And we have a great team.
Well, Shea Ralph is our guest. The Vanderbilt women's basketball team back in action tomorrow, taking on Missouri at Memorial Gym. 6:30 is the game time. Pre-game will be at 6:15 on 94.9 The Fan. And SEC women's basketball, as Joe mentioned, the environment, awesome the other day at Memorial Gym. Shea, thanks so much for taking time to be with us. Good luck coming up tomorrow against Missouri, and keep it going. We'll talk to you soon.
Yeah, thank you, guys. Everyone come watch. Come to the men's game tonight. Come on Thursday. You won't be disappointed.
Absolutely.
Thanks, Shea.
Vanderbilt basketball just rolling in the W's right now. The men's team kicking butt. Women's team undefeated. Number 7 in the nation. Destroying people.
Yeah. I mean, they're both both projected 2 seeds right now, which, of course, would mean for Shea's team that we're talking about hosting. And I really like their chances. You know, the SEC is tough. I mean, you know, there's going to be some tough games ahead, but I really like their chances to host for sure and potentially get a seed that high and potentially make a run. Both of them.
I mean, by the way, Aubrey Galvin had 2,132 points as a high school player.
That's pretty good.
It's pretty good.
Yeah, that's pretty good. But, yeah, I mean, she wasn't like, you know, obviously when they got Blake's, you know, that's a different level.
Sure.
Yeah. But I did wonder, you know, with the offseason changes, I was like, gosh, are they going to have enough around Blake's? And right now, you know, it looks really good. They've got, like you said, a cohesive team, which is not easy to do. I think it's harder to do in college sports anymore to have, right, to have that collective synergy like that.
Well,
when you change rosters as much as you do in college sports anymore.
She brought up something that we probably don't discuss enough, and that is the job that Candace Lee has done here.
Yeah.
I mean, you're talking, and I understand that the landscape of college athletics has changed, but I mean, think about the season the football team just had with Pavia and Clark Lee, the first 10-win season in school history. You got two undefeated basketball teams right now as we sit here in January with conference play beginning. And we know what baseball is with Tim Corbin. I mean, I don't think it's even close. This is the golden age right now of Vanderbilt athletics as a whole.
Clark Lee, Shea Ralph, Mark Byington are Candace Lee's hires. I mean, it'd be worth looking into this. Like, how many ADs have hit like that on football and two basketballs?
Pretty good.
In recent times? It's pretty amazing.
615-737-1025 is our phone number, 615-737-1025. We will get back into the Titans coaching search coming up next. Rex Road's got a problem. He's going to address it coming up next. 1025 The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road. 1025 The Game. Game Nashville Sports Network, your home for college football playoff. Tomorrow, following the Vanderbilt women's basketball game on 94.9 The Fan, catch number 10 Miami taking on number 6 Ole Miss in the Fiesta Bowl. College football playoff coverage presented by Twin Peaks and Parman Tractor and Equipment. Appreciate Shea Ralph for being with us in the last segment. Paul Kuharski from paulkuharski.com will be with us in the second half of the program, and we will get hot and heavy into the Titans head coaching search with him. Joe, something that has been bothering you that has been out there on the Titans coaching front and the coaching front in general over the last few days.
Well, I think this can apply to a lot of people, and I think to apply it to everyone. I think one thing we need to understand is that people can change and grow and improve. We talk about this all the time with players, right? It's like, yeah, you're allowed to improve. We think someone comes into a professional league and that's just what they are. Well, a lot of people improve. But a big thing, and this is a story, and yes, of course, this is Stilly generated, but talking about Flores, and he told this story on the air before, but just to quickly recap, you know, Flores was like Floyd Reese was in New England with Flores, and so there was some, you know, there was some question at one point about, I guess, when he got the Miami job, and it was like essentially, you know, like that Floyd had wondered about whether that he would be successful based on his time, you know, in New England with Flores. Oh, he loved him when he was there, all that stuff. But it's like, you know, can this person be a head coach? So, and this all generates from Stilly and I having a text battle the other day. And so I'm like, you know, 10 years ago, well, yeah, I guess 11 years ago, Mike Vrabel was a D-line coach at Ohio State. And he was lucky to have the job, okay? Now, he was good. He was a good recruiter for them and all that stuff, and he moved up quickly. No one ever at that point, if you worked for him at Ohio State and saw him headbutt a player who had a helmet on, which Vrabel didn't have a helmet on, and open his forehead up before a Michigan game, you tell me right then, this guy's going to be a successful NFL head coach? No. No. Point being, because this all came from like Flores and what, you know, if you're still leaning on stuff of like impressions of, that people had of someone 10 years ago, and this would have been, I mean, it, I think maybe more than 10 years ago. When was Floyd with the Patriots? 11, 12, oh, yeah. maybe about
9, 10. 10, something like that. Maybe 10.
Was it?
I think it's around there.
I thought it ended a little later than that. Is that right? Okay. But again, it's like, yeah, you know, people like Vrabel got way, but Vrabel even here from the start of like dealing with media stuff where it's like, oh my God, this is going to be a freaking bleep show, to figuring it out and look at him now. Point being, I don't care. And I'm using Flores as the example, but I just don't care if someone didn't seem ready 10 years, 12 years ago, 5 years ago, and we're still using that as some reason to not interview Flores in particular in this situation. Hell yes, you interview him. You know, and again, I'm going to bring it up with Kaharsky again when he comes in here on the lawsuit stuff, because I'm really going to be disappointed if both Saleh and Flores aren't on the interview list. I would not be able to understand it, but it applies to other people too, right? I mean, I wish I had another example, but I mean, there are coaches who were players who you never would have guessed would end up being coaches. My gosh, I covered a guy with the Michigan State basketball program. Great, great kid. But he was like, hey, how you doing? He was their video coordinator. It's like, you know, he was working hard. He was trying to figure it out. It wasn't that long ago, I swear. He's the head coach of the Phoenix Suns right now, and he's kicking ass. Jordan Ott, like, you don't – like, people grow. People get better. People who work and figure it out can actually be way different as coaches than they were 5 years ago, 10 years ago. So there you go.
There you go.
Stilly got me all fired up. But specifically with Flores, I reject the idea that, you know, look, another thing that we argued about is, okay, none of these owners will hire Flores because of what he did to Stephen Ross. And I'm like, well, I understand the thought process there, but I also think that other owners in this league know a little bit about Stephen Ross. And maybe he said, you know what? He actually had it coming. For having that gall to go to his coach and ask him to tank games. So screw him. You don't think some owners in this league are like, actually, screw Stephen Ross. Yeah. I don't care. I just, the idea that across the board, none of them would trust him, you know, don't do crap like that. I mean, look, don't do stuff like that causes the issue.
I think Flores is really intriguing. I'm with you from the standpoint of, I think defensively,
he is doing stuff in the league that nobody else is. Like, I think, and I heard, not to bring up my guy, but like Matt LaFleur talks about this a lot. He's like, yeah, Flores is like unbelievable in what he does out there. And by the way, like, I understand, like, there's a bunch of drama from the Miami stuff. You know, he did go, went 5-11 his first year as head coach of Miami, and then he was 10-6, 9-8, right? Like, I mean, he got things turned around. And I know Tua came along during that process, and, you know, I understand all that. But, like, I think he can be a good head coach in this league at some point. Now, whether or not that's now, whether or not that's the Titans, we're going to find out. But like, he's a very intriguing name to me. And I'm with you. Like, interview him, it would be disappointing if he's not there, as Paul Kuharsky has broken
in.
I
mean, he'll come in here and be like, oh, no, they won't interview him. No, and lawsuits. But I don't care. I reject
the first
that.
Thing we're talking about with Kuharsky is how happy he is that Mike McCoy is getting an interview. That's what I can't wait to talk about with him.
Well, it's funny you say that because I wanted to read Trevor's text, and who is listening to my diatribe and says, LOL, so can Mike McCoy grow and figure it out? Well, I would say he can, Trevor. I think anybody can get better. Paul Kuharsky, he can get better. I know he can.
Mike McCoy.
He's not done growing.
Significantly younger than I first thought.
How old is Mike McCoy?
I think he's like 53.
That's insane. So you're telling me that Mike McCoy is a full decade younger than John Harbaugh?
That's what I'm telling you.
That is so wild. It's like sometimes when you look back, like someone threw out like a Wilford Brimley photo from when he filmed Cocoon. He was like 50. Like, what? He wasn't 83? He was 50 when he filmed Cocoon? How?
And we just compared Mike McCoy and Wilford Brimley. So there you go.
I could see Mike McCoy breakdancing.
Paul Kuharsky from paulkuharsky.com will be with us coming up next for the remainder of the program. We got a lot of stuff to get into on the Tennessee Titans front with him. We will do that. Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5 The Game. Welcome back in. Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Ian Safar. Paul Kuharsky from paulkuharsky.com is with us for the remainder of the show. And we will get into all things Tennessee Titans with him. PK, good morning.
Good
How are
morning.
You?
I am energized, shockingly, for a couple days after the season. Excited to be here.
Didn't have to watch. No more watching this version of the Tennessee Titans. Now we're moving on.
Well, this will be the first weekday that I am not in Metro Center in quite a long time. Look at Ian's helping my lighting. I'm going to be well lit.
It's a big show this morning.
You can see the full fatness of my face as I begin to work on eating less, doing more activity, all of these off-season missions.
Oh, resolutions. Got a bunch of resolutions doing.
Who was I talking to? Braden Gall, I think, said not resolutions, but I can't remember the word he used. But I'm going to make progress on issues.
Okay.
Eat
Making
less,
some progress.
Eat less, do more, go to the dentist. Things like this.
Nice. That seems like a good idea. Yeah.
It's on the list. I'm not saying I'm going yet, but I'm intending to go.
It's under consideration.
New Year intentions.
There we go. I like that.
Yeah, that's good.
I like that. So what did you make of Mike Borgonzi's press conference yesterday? I mean, obviously there was a hesitation on his part to really go into any sort of detail about any of the candidates out there. Not that I really expected him to do that, but, you know, Cam Ward's progress came up. You know, some of the things that he's looking for and a head coach came up, as you pointed out, at paulkuharsky.com. A lot of those things sound familiar that the Titans may have had years ago.
This is not on Mike Borgonzi in any way, shape, or form because he hasn't been here. And I find him to be an alpha personality, which I like. But the job description, I mean, I asked him about an alpha, and he said, you know, I think that's overrated. There are leaders who are more quiet, but they're demanding. But then when I asked him what he wanted, the job description was Mike Vrabel. And so, you know, they're looking for a guy that they fired 2 years ago, and I don't know that they're going to – I'm pretty certain they're not going to find a better version of Mike Vrabel, and that's the standard I'm holding them to. They don't need to find somebody that's better than Brian Callahan. They need to find somebody who's as good as Mike Vrabel. Then people come back at me with, you know, Vrabel's record down the stretch and everything, and they don't seem to understand, A, the circumstances he was under, B, how management – let things go south. Vrabel had a role in it, but people who are own the team and manage the team, let things spiral for 2 years instead of working to get control, and B, that a good coach could have a couple bad years in a scenario where the draft has been so horrible and things went bad, and he had a chance to ultimately, you know, if you stick with a guy, you can – a franchise is capable of rebounding, they make it like, oh, no, they had to get rid of him in order to get in position to go from 6 wins and 7 wins to 3 wins and 3 wins.
So you come right in glazing Vrabel, huh? Just Vrabel glazing right from the start. We had a texter who asked, like, how long will it take till Kaharski says Vrabel's name?
It's what
Good question.
It's what I wrote last night. Didn't you think the job description sounded an awful lot like Mike Vrabel?
Yeah.
No. You did.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, I guess you're right on that.
The thing is, he said, what are the two words? Conflict and connection. A guy has to be able to, you know, there's going to be conflict.
Not
part
afraid
of the
of
job
conflict.
Is conflict and yeah. connection. Well, Amy Adams Strunk loves the connection part. She can't handle the conflict part. That's what worries me if she is involved in everything. Well, I don't know about the conflict part, Mike. Yeah, I love the connection part. We might be able to put the word collaboration back in rotation in our buzzwords. It's been out of circulation long enough now that people might take it again. But conflict, I she might have been on the phone with him right after this press conference and said, conflict? Conflict? That's a little scary to me now.
We don't do that here, Mike.
Yeah. We had some conflict, and it ended up in Rand Carthon.
Okay. All right, I want to get rid of something right away.
Okay.
And I guess this is – I'll step back if you know, we were talking on the air, PK. So I've been talking Flores. I think it's crazy that teams wouldn't want Flores. You think that it's just a non-starter and that until the lawsuit's resolved that no one will give him an interview to be a head coach. He is not a viable candidate
well,
to be anybody's
head coach.
Well,
I didn't think that coming in to this, but I haven't heard his name once, not just – here, but anywhere. So it seems like it's a non-starter and that the league is willing for him to be a coordinator while he's got this lawsuit going, but not willing to have him be a head coach.
So also, collusion. So you are charging collusion. Okay.
Probably. Also, I'll say this. I'll say there is a case against him as a head coach. I think he's a fantastic defensive mind. He was not a great player relations guy in Miami. He couldn't
stand Tua.
Yeah, I mean, that's not a great way to go. Even if your quarterback is terrible, you have to have some kind of smooth relation with your quarterback. And his – look, I would have behaved like he behaved with Tua.
Yeah.
And that's one of the many reasons that I'm not an NFL head coach, right? That's kind of my management approach, which is why I – had a one-man operation with a few contributors who, you know, say, here's what I'm doing this week.
PK works for no man. It's not happening. All right, so what do you make of the Harbaugh stuff being out there? Because Harbaugh, fired by Baltimore, obviously, I mean, he's going to move to the top of everybody's wish list, whether it's the Titans, the Falcons, whoever. That's out there, the Giants. I mean, there's a lot of people think that's where he's going to end up. What do you make of Harbaugh, and how realistic is it that the Titans could have a shot to land him?
People are about to – I heard pretty authoritatively last night. For him, it's the Giants, or he's got another team that he would like to go to that would probably fire its head coach. I think I could say Tampa Bay. And I'm all in favor of Tampa. I'm a fan of Tampa Bay. I think they're starting to get old, but I think that roster is far better than it's performed. I don't know why they extend Todd Bowles. I don't think Todd Bowles is a Super Bowl caliber head coach. And I think if you put John Harbaugh on that team, it would be way more threatening.
So that suggests then that he's big on Baker. Right, that's the choice.
I mean, I think most people would be big on Baker. Easton Freeze has pointed this out. I'll give him credit. The Giants can only hire one guy. Every coach,
yeah, it's connected to the Giants.
You know, so Halfley, who's one of the hottest young guys, was pinned to the Giants immediately. He's from right near there.
Yeah.
He got 30 tickets for his family when the Packers played there. So before the big guns came available, Halfley's going to the Giants. Stefanski becomes available, and everybody says, Stefanski is going to the Giants. Then Harbaugh happens. Harbaugh is going to the Giants. Well, they can't hire all three guys.
Why? They could be the head coach OCDC.
So, you know, if they get the top guy, and it seems like the most favored job by almost everybody, I think part of it is, you know, it's a prestigious franchise, not lately, but generally. If you do well there, you get more shine than if you do well anywhere. And I think they pay, you know, and that's a factor. So Giants, number one job. It's unfortunate that Baltimore's open. I mean, Baltimore's the number one job,
yep.
Not for Harbaugh, but for anybody else. I can't see Baltimore hiring Stefanski in divisions, kind of like trading coaches. And I would presume they're going to hire somebody young, up and coming, like they did with Harbaugh, though it was 18 years ago. It's still the same people, DaCosta, a branch of Ozzie Newsome. So then those two jobs are filled. That leaves, you know, the third guy now to be Tennessee, Atlanta, Arizona, whatever. And I think the Titans measure up to the rest of those other jobs.
Yeah. I hear what you're saying on that. It's hard for me to understand like Stefanski, for example. Do you think that if we just take Harbaugh out of the equation, right, like I think anybody would, like, is Kevin Stefanski a real thing here?
I think so, but I this is what I was getting before Baltimore opened.
Yeah.
So I don't know where Baltimore is on Stefanski, but I think Stefanski is a realistic shot here.
If not, I'm excited about that. I think a lot of fans are excited about that. But there's some people who are really down on that.
Oh, yeah.
I guess you can argue either way on any of these people.
Here's the one thing that I surmised about Stefanski, about Saleh, and so, you know, that's only two. But they're the two guys who have been in the league as head coaches. So I think this might be more a circumstance of current coaches in the league. And I know Saleh's not current, but recent. Is that they don't hold their guys to account enough, right? And so my question is that a particular Stefanski and Saleh issue? Or is that a state of the league in 2025 issue with these kids?
Generation.
And it's hard.
Soft generation.
But the thing is, like, there were a bunch of clips of players in Cleveland who were talking about what they want in their next coach, and they were talking about that. You know, we really want to be held to account. We want a guy that – so, they say, you know, it's like guys say they want discipline.
And then they get
but then when they get it, they don't want it.
Yeah.
So that didn't paint Stefanski in a great light. But I do tend to think, like you're saying, Joe, that it's more generational and about the players than it is about the coach. And I think it's a tough line to find. And I'll go back to saying I think that's part of what makes Vrabel special
is that he
can do it, though, right? He gets on guys' asses and is still friendly with them and knows how to navigate that line where there's conflict and community.
Like, I feel like Tomlin's another example of balance there.
At Harbaugh,
yeah,
too, right? That's why they're among the top guys.
I have no problem with the Titans casting a wide net. There's another candidate in particular that I'm going to talk about here in a minute.
I think I know.
Well, you know where I'm going right now. There's another one that I'm talking about here in a minute that even after yesterday, I'm like, no, they don't even waste your time interviewing. We'll get into that here in a minute. Can you explain to me the Jason Garrett thing? Can you explain to me why Jason Garrett would be on the radar for the Titans?
I cannot. I mean, I hope it's in the basket of this guy's got a wide range of exposure. You know, Dak Prescott developed there to whatever degree, and there's some stuff to be learned that might be applicable to Cam. and we can get a lot of information out of him, and maybe he surprises us, you know, something like that. I would hope he fits in that basket, you know, and give him a chance to blow us away and all of that. But to me, he's just very milquetoast. Also, Ian Rappaport pushed him so hard for the TV gig that I just picture him sitting in that office with Ian anytime Ian wants to come to town, and it makes me want to not live.
Like, how many coaches have been away? You know, I know he's in the media sense, but like been out of the game for that long who then had success?
I don't know.
That's a long time.
It gives me an Aaron Boone feeling, and you know how big a fan I am of that.
Like, seriously, is there – I'll put it out there to listeners. Is there an example – I can't think of one – of someone who's been detached from coaching for that long who then got back in? I mean, like, guys take a year or two, right?
Right. And then when McCarthy was out between Green Bay and Dallas.
Well, how long was that? A year? Yeah, two? Was it two?
Maybe two. Might have been one. But Peter King did, you know, and these are all rehabilitation pieces intended to help a guy get back in the league. But he wrote all about, you know, all the studying McCarthy was doing and the revisions to his thinking and all of that. Jason Garrett hasn't been doing that. I don't think – has Jason Garrett, like, talked about wanting back in the league?
I don't think so.
That's what makes this so surprising. Jason Garrett's been telestrating.
Hey, Joe Gibbs was out for 12 years.
There you go.
Okay. That's okay. Well, that's also one of the greatest –
and had a Hall of Fame
greatest
career.
Coaches of all time. It's a little different. Right. He actually might be the greatest coach of all time. So, the Dave Borgonzi, Mike's brother, was assistant under Garrett. This is – I guess Easton tweeted this. Someone else on the text line said it today.
That's important.
But I mean,
has he been fired? Dave Borgonzi?
I don't know. It's a good question.
Because I think he's in jeopardy.
I mean, that to me is
and
like.
You know who one of his linebackers was.
Yes. Yes, I do.
Kenneth Murray.
But I know we got to go, but like, so, you know, I understand the people throwing out the Nagy thing with the buddy stuff. We can talk about that. But like that, and I kind of reject that. I mean, Nagy is a legitimate candidate.
Sure.
But this does kind of, if that's the, you know what I mean? Like, it feels a little bit like, let's give my buddy an interview.
But maybe his brother said, look, this guy has a wealth of information that you should tap into while you can. And I am big. Al Davis did this, and I'm surprised more people don't. Interview 20 people and pull everything out of their heads.
You may have a counterpoint to Robbie's rant here.
And if guys are willing to come in and you can do that, I'm fine. Just don't surprise me and hire one of them.
Yeah, there's one I don't want to be interviewed. We'll get into that coming up next on the Rob Rant. This is 102.5 The Game.
Don't make me angry.
Sometimes you have to tell someone to pound sand.
You wouldn't like me when I'm angry.
This is the Rob Rant.
Now
on Robbie and Rex Road.
Come in here and kick Rabel's ass real quick.
We got Bible study at 3:30 during the snack period.
Am I a clown to you, Mike?
I'm funny how? I mean funny like I'm a clown, I amuse you.
I have dyslexia.
Paul, the dyslexic jerk.
If my zipper's up, I feel like I'm in style.
Catch one stray pee-pee and...
You can't give alley-oops.
Oh, no! We would not tolerate that sort of behavior in Knoxville!
Then it's just total nonsense.
It is time for the Rob Rant, brought to you by Functional Medicine of Tennessee. Heal from the inside out. Check them out at functionalmedicineoftennessee.net. Paul Kuharsky with us here on the program for the remainder of the show, taking your thoughts on the Titans coaching search at 615-737-1025. There's a candidate out there that we talked about a little bit yesterday that I just – the more information that comes out, I don't know why the Titans are really wasting their time on this. Like, apparently Cliff Kingsbury is going to be interviewed at some point. I don't understand the appeal there. Like, he had a nice year as the offensive coordinator last year with Jaden Daniels. He was a head coach in Arizona, failed spectacularly. He was a head coach at Texas Tech, wasn't very good at Texas Tech, ended up parlaying it into a head coaching job. And now, for some reason, after his second year in Washington, they parted ways there. And they've made it seem like it's this mutual parting of ways. Apparently, there was some disagreement between Kingsbury and Dan Quinn about like the run pass balance that takes place in that offense, and he's out the door to quote pursue other opportunities. So that relationship has come to an end. I do not really understand the appeal of Cliff Kingsbury.
I love when the Pursue Other Opportunities comes out and somebody immediately tweets the picture of him on that couch, like in Malibu. Pursuing other opportunities. That looks like a hell of an opportunity. Yeah. And I believe he's a single man. Single man. Pursuing other opportunities. I mean,
he was just going to go live in Thailand for a couple years, wasn't he?
Yeah.
He was like, all right,
I guess I'll coach again.
As far as the Titans, I mean, I was just talking about, you know, pick as many brains as you can. I think some of these interviews really are, you know, hey, we'd think about you as a head coach, but ultimately thinking like we're setting ourselves up here for some potential coordinator possibilities. And so, like, to me, Raheem Morris, if he doesn't get a head coaching job, is there for you to be able to say, if you hire an offensive head coach and he doesn't have a dead set defensive coordinator or can't get his guy, hey, we talked to Raheem Morris, you know, potentially, and we really liked him, and it's kind of the LaFleur setup. And so that Kingsbury could be like that. And I think Kingsbury has been a pretty good offensive coordinator. I think this is a crazy move by the Commanders if you consider what they did just 2 years ago. I mean, if you're the Commanders, you have to say this is, I think, I didn't watch them that closely this year. I'm not that familiar with everything that went wrong, but I would put this year in parentheses and say we're trying to go back to 2024, what worked in 2024, and part of what worked in 2024 was Cliff Kingsbury calling plays for Jaden Daniels. So, who are they getting that's better than Cliff Kingsbury to do that? I mean, some of these teams act like I can just go get a coordinator to replace my coordinator who was good 2 years ago, no problem. And I think it's kind of like delusional.
So it sounds like you hate Cliff Kingsbury and you love Cliff Kingsbury. I don't want him as
a head coach. I agree with you. I think he's proven failure.
Yeah,
he's proven sufficiently that he's a failure as a head coach. But I like the possibility of him
as a coordinator.
As a coordinator.
So yeah, like that's how it worked out with LaFleur. Would you be upset, Robbie, if Cliff Kingsbury, that shouldn't be a tongue twister, is the Titans offensive coordinator?
I mean, it depends on who the coach is. But yeah. I'm fine with that.
Okay.
Yeah.
Hey, here's a great piece of trivia, and I have been forgetting this. So I will share it here first. We've been talking a lot about this marriage that John Robinson set up for Mike Vrabel with Matt LaFleur as his offensive coordinator. And I've been saying that Vrabel couldn't get his top two guys. His top guy was Ryan Day, and I was failing to remember who his second guy was. Does anybody remember who his second guy was?
No.
His second guy was Matt Nagy.
Hey, there we go. Matt Nagy.
Interesting. Where are you on Matt Nagy, by the way?
Not my favorite, but I'm not putting on a chef's hat, and I'm not making Borgonzi scheme shirts and all of that.
Let Borgonzi bake.
I'm saying let Borgonzi bake. and look, the sample size is small, so I understand the desperation for faith. And I don't trust that Amy's not going to mess it up. But I'm giving him faith for right now. And I think the odds are that they wind up uncovering somebody out of these kind of no-name-ish group that they like. And that's not a bad thing. Like, if you take Vrabel out of having played a 10-year career, you know, he's a guy that coached Ohio State for a little while and had a bad year as defensive coordinator. Would we have been excited about that hire at all?
Probably not.
And then he came in his first 4 years, they had a terrific 4-year run. And so that's the kind of hire I'm more likely expecting. A Halfley, a Minter, somebody like that, that you don't know much about until you see him in action.
By the way, Dick Vermeil is another of the examples of a long
way.
But again, that's also a great coach.
Another Hall of Fame. Yeah.
Gruden.
Yeah,
that's a great. Yeah, that's Gruden. True. Yeah, that's true.
Not a Hall of Fame coach.
Yeah.
Now he's broadcasting for a while.
He won a Super Bowl, and he did broadcast. Then he came back, and it wasn't going. How long did he coach before all that crap happened and he got bounced? Was he in like his second year?
No, I think he was in his first year.
Oh, was that right away?
I'm not positive.
So it's hard to really know like if it would have worked out. But yeah,
he was in his second year. Okay. No, excuse me, his third year.
Oh, okay. Really? Very forgettable.
I keep the list keeps growing. He was in his fourth year. He got hired by the Raiders in 2018. He was there for 18, 19, 20, and then five games in 2021.
Give us records.
Yeah, what were his records?
His records in 18, 4-12, 7-9, 8-8, and then he was 3-2 when he got fired.
Yeah, he's a brilliant coach. I'm going to praise the market, which is rare. The Gruden talk, way down.
Minimal.
People seem to have either given up or come to their senses.
Well, not just overall, I thought for sure he was going to get a college job. I thought he was going to get a college job. And it's like, nah. Arkansas, whoever. Yeah, we're good.
Why take a college job when you can sit all day and open boxes of enormous amounts of clothes and wear any team?
I agree, but he has been out there saying how desperately he wants one of these jobs, right? So, but yeah, I think the groomers are like actually dying.
It's a young man's, young man's business.
Paul Kuharsky will be with us for the remainder of the show. We welcome your questions on our text line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com on the Titans coaching search front. We will get hot and heavy into that. Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5 The Game.